Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special Everyone Panic edition of the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. No, don't panic. Although it seems like we have watched a month of baseball in the last 3 days. Things have been changing by the minute. It's been crazy and not an opening series like we wanted to have. And I thought it'd be a good idea to get on here and just talk while it's all fresh in my mind about this first series, what we can draw from it, why we shouldn't panic, or maybe I'll come to the conclusion that we should panic. I don't know. And then at the end, we're going to have a conversation with Sydney Price. Sydney Price is, she's been one of our best friends over at patreon.com/redlegradio for a while. And I like talking to these younger Reds fans to get their perspective on following a team like this in a time like this when they've not been good for a while and what it means when they're going to be good and then we have a season like this. But stay tuned for my conversation with Sydney later. Right now, let's talk about the opening day game, the opening series against those Detroit Tigers. And opening day could not have been more magical. Well, it could have been. I was in the park when Joe Randa hit a home run to win the opening day game. You know, there have been great ones. And if any of you have been to opening day, you know they're all amazing, frankly. They're all fun. Whether the Reds win or lose, they're always fun. Just because it's opening day. But this opening day, obviously, no one's in the park but the players and coaches. And so it's a different opening day in Cincinnati more than anywhere because, obviously, it's a holiday here. But that being said, the Reds played great. They dominated the Detroit Tigers. They won 7-1 behind an incredible outing from Sonny Gray and the big-time hitting of new Red Mike Moustakas. Great night for all the new Reds on opening night. It was just all around. The optimism that I saw in among Reds fans after that opening day win was as high as I've seen it in a long time. And, of course, like the Reds always tend to do, they'll smack you across the face and bring you right back to earth. More on that in a moment. I did dip back into Twitter on opening day, and I said, well, I'll try it just during the game. And for the first series, I tried just during the game. And I remembered by the third game why I don't need to be on Twitter. So I'm not sure I'll go back. We'll see. It was fun talking to some of my old friends from Twitter. If we're just talking about the Reds, then it's good. It's fun. We can deal with that. But when you start talking about anything else other than the Reds, or if the Reds are playing bad, it starts getting in a bad area that I really don't need. But let's talk about opening day and then talk about all the things that happened since opening day to make this feel like a month. First of all, the offense was fantastic on opening day against 7 runs on 9 hits, but the Reds got a 2-0 lead in the first inning, and we really felt like it was going to be happening, you know. Bases loaded, Nick Castellanos' first at bat for the Reds, gets hit by a pitch and gets an RBI, which is, you know, fantastic. Then Mike Moustakas singles in another run, so they did leave the bases loaded out there in the first inning, and had bases loaded with no outs and only got 2 runs. Only, I don't know, you know. I saw some complaining about that. I can understand. You feel like you left a run or two out of there. It would have been good to get 3 or more and really end it, but as it turned out, it was fine. Detroit got a run back in the fourth, but then immediately Joey Votto hit a solo home run. And let me tell you, that is the story of opening day to me. If you're looking for a storyline, well, there's the story. I think that's one of two by far biggest stories out of opening weekend for the Reds. Joey Votto mashed the ball all weekend. I mean, it looked like a beach ball to him at the plate. I mean, he hit 4 balls right at the first baseman that if they hadn't been caught, would have killed somebody. I mean, Joey Votto was just completely locked in all weekend, and it started with a home run on opening day, a solo homer that put the Reds back up by 3 runs. The very following inning, we finally got to see Shogo Akiyama make his Cincinnati debut. Now, I was surprised that Akiyama didn't start, and I've really got some issues that we'll probably talk about on our regular podcast on Friday about David Bell's overmanaging. And I hesitate to say that because let me be clear. I think that David Bell is the best manager the Reds have had since Davey Johnson. And if you listen very long, you know what I think about Davey Johnson. So, there are some things to criticize, I think, about his in-game managing. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But when I criticize, know that I'm coming at it from a place where I do think he's a really good manager in a lot of ways. And a lot of people are going to go ahead and unfollow the podcast as soon as they hear me say that, because David Bell has some detractors out there. But Akiyama didn't start, which I'm sure made a bunch of Japanese reporters upset, because when he made his debut, the Reds became the last team to have a Japanese player. And he did finally come in, and what did he do? RBI single. Castellanos, Moustakas, and Akiyama, the three big free agent acquisitions for the Reds, all collected RBIs in their very first at-bat for the Reds. So you know that Dick Williams and Nick Kroll are sitting up there in the box, if that's where they were watching the game, and just having to be loving that opening day, seeing those guys contribute really immediately, their first opportunities for the Reds. After that, Nick Castellanos walked in the seventh. Travis Jankowski came in to pinch run for him. That's important. We'll talk about it in just a little bit later. Jankowski immediately stole second base. By the way, have you seen Travis Jankowski? I swear he looks like he should be in some sort of a band that melds, that fuses Southern rock with Americana or folk or something. I'm pretty sure he does. He did that during the quarantine. Anyway, stole second base, but that still didn't matter because Mike Moustakas delivered again, 421-foot home run to right field, and that was 7-1, and that was that. So, you know, seven runs, fantastic. This offense looks great, we were thinking at that time. And I still believe it's a great offense, okay? You know, let's not put too much on. Even though each of these games are worth 2.7 games apiece, let's not put too much into one series. But the other storyline from opening day was Sonny Gray. Six innings, only 90 pitches. And, you know, I understand it's early in the season, letting some of these guys not go. I would have sent him back out there for at least one more inning. Same with Luis Castillo on day two. David Bell did send Trevor Bauer out for that seventh inning in game three, but just for one batter. But anyway, Sonny Gray just allowed one earned run, struck out nine batters, walked two, nine strikeouts, which seems pretty good until you look at what his competition did the next 2 days. But Sonny Gray was just outstanding, absolutely outstanding. And one of those strikeouts was his 1,000th of his major league career. And the most amazing stat, every time I see it, it just blows my mind that this can be true. Sonny Gray extended his major league record, 34 consecutive starts, allowing six or fewer hits. And that's kind of one of these stats. Where do you pull that one out? Elias. But that's pretty crazy that no one's done that in the history of Major League Baseball until Sonny Gray, 34 straight starts with allowing six or fewer hits. So he misses bats. He misses bats. So that was opening day, and man, we were pumped up. You were pumped up. Wherever you were pumped up on opening day after that. It was baseball finally back. Yeah, that sort of sense of normalcy that I wrote about in my Cincinnati Magazine piece this week, my column. It was normal. There was a designated hitter. There were no fans there. But man, it just felt like baseball's back. And hey, the Reds are actually good. And then the drama started. And it's been nothing but nonstop drama since then. You remember I told you that David Bell sent in Travis Jankowski or Bronson Arroyo Light to pinch run for Nick Castellanos in the seventh inning? Well, Castellanos was upset. He stuck around in the field after the game. Stayed out in right field, evidently, if I understood the story correctly. I wasn't in the stadium. They didn't allow me there, so I didn't see it for myself. And he had a heated discussion with at least one coach before having another heated discussion with David Bell. And he stayed out there for, I don't know, 45 minutes, an hour after the game, taking fly balls, line drives, working on his defense. He did the same. He got to the park early before game two and took some defensive practice out there. Had a coach shooting in a pitching machine, you know, shooting line drives to him and fly balls and running them down and working on angles. And David Bell confirmed to the media that, yeah, Nick Castellanos was hot about being removed from the game. And I guess he did not accept the explanation that Bell gave him for it, which is that, you know, we're trying to get a guy. And Jankowski, you know, is a speedy guy, really good defender. And, you know, so we're trying to protect our lead and, you know, get a guy in there. Well, okay. It was 5-1 game at the time in the seventh. And that's one of my issues with David Bell is he's just way too quick to pull a guy from a game. It's like it's little league and he wants to get everybody in the game sometimes. And I know what he's doing. He's trying to work the matchups. And I think the fact that he's actually aware of those lefty righty matchups and aware of what the numbers say is part of what makes him a good manager. I think he goes way too far with it sometimes. But and that's how you end up with Phil Irvin batting against right-handers, a right-handed pitcher late in the game on Sunday, because you've blown all your chips on the bench. And you got nothing left to do, whereas it could have been Shogo Akiyama hitting against that right-handed pitcher. But anyway, I'm not going to get into that right now. We'll talk about that later. So, but David Bell said, you know, yeah, he was not happy. And if you see the video and the pictures of it, you can see Castellanos really getting upset. And so a lot of people were criticizing Castellanos on the Twitters. I'm told I didn't see that because as soon as the game was over, I got out of Twitter. I can't deal with that. But my take on it was just that, you know, I don't have a problem with Castellanos being upset. David Bell's quote was, "You should never want to come out of a game ever. So I get it. There are a lot worse ways to handle it when you're pissed that you come out of a game. That's for sure." Yeah. You know, you're really mad that you came out of the game. So what do? You go practice more. So you'll get better. So you don't have to come out of the game. I mean, that's a matter of fact, I think you give me 25 Castellanos guys with that kind of a thought process, and I think you're going to have a pretty good team. So I don't have a problem with it. But again, that's drama day one that you really maybe don't want publicly. I want that to be inside the clubhouse. And I will note that Castellanos played every inning the rest of the series, I believe, unless I'm mistaken. So, but anyway, that was a blip on the radar. The Reds won 7-1. Man, exciting times for the Cincinnati Reds, right? Yeah. So game two comes around Saturday. First of all, Matt Davidson, who barely made the roster, was in the opening day lineup as the designated hitter. And it sounded like the explanation was that he had a pretty good small sample against the Tigers starter. I don't see how the 30th man on the bench or 29th man on the bench should be in your opening day roster. Shogo Akiyama's sitting and Matt Davidson's hitting. I get it. Lefty righty. I know what's going on. He was trying to get his lineup the right way he wanted to get it. And I don't know, but Matt Davidson after the game or the next morning tested positive for COVID-19. After playing the game the night before. So he was placed on the COVID list. They call it the injured list. There's a 10-day IL, what used to be the DL, 10-day IL. And then this year there's what they're just calling an IL, but it's the COVID-19 injured list. And this is going to be important for a discussion later in this conversation, but you can be placed on that if you don't even have to test positive. If you're showing some kind of symptoms or anything, they can put you on there, keep you away and get another player on the real roster. So he did that. And then the thing is, you can come off. You don't have to wait 10 days or 15 days or anything like that. Like you have to wait 10 days on the regular injured list. You can come back as soon as you've tested positive, or excuse me, two negative tests at least 24 hours apart. So, you know, you come back a couple of days if you test negative. So, and again, that'll come in later. Best of luck to Matt Davidson. I hope he's not feeling too many symptoms. Hope he comes back quickly. I like Matt Davidson. I'm glad he's in the Reds organization. Don't have anything bad to say about him except that I want him to get better. So he was placed on that list. Tucker Barnhart the same day was placed on the 3-day paternity list. And Tucker and his wife, really his wife did the heavy lifting, but they had another child. And everybody, reports are that everyone's healthy and very happy. And so good for them. Tucker's been going to be away probably for another day or so. And so the Reds, those two guys were removed from the roster, so the Reds had to add a couple of people. They added our guy Aristides Aquino, who would end up having a big hit. Well, it didn't turn out to be a big hit, but it looked like a big hit at the time on Sunday. And then right-handed pitcher T.J. Antone. Now, Antone did not pitch this week, so when he pitches, he'll be making his Major League debut. But those guys were brought up from the Prasco Park roster. And then we had the game. And listen when I tell you that I really thought the Reds were about to really take off this season. They jumped out to a lead again in the first inning with a scoring run in the top of the first. And that run, I should say that the Tigers actually scored a run first. I'm getting ahead of myself. But then they came back with a run on a Joey Votto home run. First time in his career he's hit home runs in the first 2 days of the season. And then the bottom of the second, that's when the Reds take a 3-1 lead. Nick Senzel draws a 4-pitch walk. And Freddie Galvis follows with a 372-foot home run, giving the Reds a 3-1 lead. So after 2 innings, the Reds are 3-1. And on the mound, Luis Castillo is dazzling. I mean, he's just the Leo Castillo. Can we call him Leo Castillo now? Good grief. What is wrong with me? The Reds have warped my brain already after 3 days. Luis Castillo was just dominant. So 3-1 lead seemed like it was an impossibly large lead for the Reds. Well, the offense goes silent, and Castillo's great through six. He completely dominated. 11 strikeouts. Only gave up 6 hits and a walk. 11 strikeouts, so no pizza. But I ordered some pizza for the family just to celebrate. And then the bullpen happened. Robert Stevenson came in, gave up a deep home run to the very first hitter he faced. So it's 3-2. He then allowed a blooper to center field, a single, before getting a strikeout for the first out of the inning. And then comes Michael Lorenzen. Lorenzen got a force out, but then hung a changeup way up in the zone, if you saw it, to Miguel Cabrera. And Miguel Cabrera does what Miguel Cabrera has done for many years to people that hang a changeup up in the zone. He put it into the outfield seats for a home run and a 4-3 Tigers lead. So, we go to the ninth. And, I need to find the... See, I'm doing this on the fly here. Let me find the game log here, if we've got it. Because here we go. I want to see what happened at the bottom of the eighth. If you don't mind, come on. I should have done this before I started, right? That's what you're thinking. Leave me alone. Who asked you? Yeah. No, it was 4-4. Yeah, the Reds scored again in the bottom of the seventh. That was in the seventh that all that happened with Lorenzen. And in the bottom of the seventh, the Reds scored. And how they scored was Kurt Casale. Oh, man. I don't see the distance on this thing. But he hit a home run to dead center field. That was, a blast. And Casale's another guy that hit well in this opening series. He had to play all 3 days because of Barnhart being gone. I guess he didn't play on opening day. But I'm telling you, really looked good. So the Reds tied the game up in the bottom of the seventh, and it was still tied in the ninth when Rozel Iglesias picked up where he left off last season. A tire of Rozel Iglesias. He probably went in and complained because David Bell didn't put him in a safe situation. The game was tied when he came in. That's what he complained about last year, if you recall. Opposite field single, and then gave up a 2-run home run to Jacoby Jones for the Tigers, and that was that. Reds couldn't score in the bottom half, and they blew a game that they should have won. They wasted an incredible start by Luis Castillo. Again, I said 11 strikeouts. That gets him 500 in his career after Sonny Gray reached 1,000 the night before. Reds pitchers total had 17 strikeouts and just a walk, and they blow a game. After the game, I was like, I know each game is 2.7 times more important. Each loss is as well. But, those things happen. But, man, you really can't lose games to bad teams like this. in a shortened season like this. It's not the end of the world. They can come back and still dominate the National League, obviously. Still 58 games to go at that point. But man, in a short season, the magnitude of those losses really expanded because the Tigers are not good. And the Reds really need to win the games against the bad teams because they're going to, you know, essentially the way I've always felt is if you can just go 500 with the good teams, beat up on the teams behind you, you're going to be great. You're going to have a great season. And so that's a really sort of shorthand way to look at it. But they blew one that they absolutely should have won. But still, 1-1, you know, two great starts by Sonny Gray and Luis Castillo. I'm thinking, oh, we're okay. So then comes Sunday. And in the hour before the afternoon game started, things went kind of crazy. Evidently, Mike Moustakas woke up and he was not feeling well. So he didn't even come to the ballpark. And the Reds put Moustakas on that COVID injured list. Now, I say that, but remember, like I said earlier, you don't have to test positive. We've still not heard that Moustakas has tested positive or anything. So let's not get ahead of ourselves here. I'm sure they try to get him a test today, if possible, on a Sunday. But he was scratched from the lineup. And then Nick Senzel, some shenanigans went off the lineup, and Nick Senzel was placed in the lineup. And a little bit later, more shenanigans. Nick Senzel is scratched. And we got no word about that until after the game when David Bell said that Nick Senzel also was not feeling well. Didn't see him at the game on television, but I don't know if he was there or not. I'm sure they got him away if he wasn't feeling well. But so that's two players on the heels of Matt Davidson testing positive the day before. And so people are freaking out, as you can imagine. What's going on? And there's some stories about what's going on in the Marlins, on the Marlins roster. You know how things are this day and age, for good reason. You don't know what's happening one day to the next with this thing. And so there for a little while, it looked like, oh my gosh, this is all going to crash down upon us. And it may. I'm not going to predict that it's not going to, but all that was happening. So, Senzel was scratched. They put Jankowski in the starting lineup for him. For Moustakas, what was interesting is that he was placed on that injured list really quickly. Senzel has not yet been put on that injured list, unless I've missed it in the last few minutes. But Tyler Stevenson, Reds' number two prospect, Tyler Stevenson, the catcher, was called up to replace Moustakas on the roster. Interesting because, obviously, Barnhart is not here because of the paternity list. Stevenson didn't play on Sunday, so he'll be making his Major League debut whenever he does get into a game. I imagine he's probably going back to Prasco tomorrow or the next day when Barnhart comes back. But still, it was good to see Tyler Stevenson on an actual Major League roster for the first time in his career. Congrats to him. Hope he has a long and productive Major League career. So, there you go. All that was going on as the game. And it kind of felt like when the game started that, what are we doing here? You know, why are we... And I saw that sentiment a lot. Oh, how do we have to play a game? And I'm sure it was on the players' minds. And I'm not getting too much into the virus stuff, except that as it affects baseball. But I'm sure it's a strange time to be in trying to play baseball there. And we come out, and for the third consecutive day, the Reds got absolutely dominant starting pitching. Three straight games. Trevor Bauer... It was by far his best performance in a Reds uniform. You know, he kind of struggled with the Reds last year. He looked dominant. I mean, he looked like the almost Cy Young Trevor Bauer, the all-star Trevor Bauer from a couple years ago. Struck out 13, allowed just one run in 6 1/3 innings, and just that was a guy that we didn't see last year. And it was kind of funny. David Bell let him come out to pitch the 7th inning and just let him pitch to the first hitter because it was a right-handed hitter. And Bell comes out after he retires that first hitter of the 7th to take him out of the game. And Bauer turns like he's mad, like he's going, and acts like he's going to throw the ball into the center field bleachers like he did in famously in Cleveland, if you remember. And then he turned around and he was smiling, laughing about it. Great day for him. But then, you know, the offense disappeared and Michael Lorenzen did the same thing he did the day before. The offense almost scored in the fifth. Jankowski walked, and then Kirk Casale hit a ball again to dead center. I thought, man, that's going to be a home run, and it wasn't. But Jacoby Jones made this great leaping catch, and it wouldn't have been a home run anyway, but it would have, as well as Jankowski runs, he definitely would have scored. And the Reds did end up scoring that inning, though. Jesse Winker and Joey Votto. Votto had singled Jankowski in. Jesse Winker singled before him. And the Reds end up leaving the bases loaded, but it's 1-1 at that time. And the Reds just nothing doing hardly after that until the ninth. But before we get to the ninth, oh my goodness. Pedro Strop comes in, throws a hitless inning in the eighth. Looked pretty good. And again, his cap was at a jaunty angle. Still 1-1 going to the ninth. Michael Lorenzen comes in. And Michael Lorenzen gives up a two-run home run to CJ Cron. I've been kind of buying the hype on this bullpen that it's good, but some of the people that were dissenters on that point, they got some data for their argument this weekend. Michael Lorenzen and Rosell Iglesias are two of the key guys, and they did not perform this weekend. But small sample, I'm not giving up on anybody. Eugenio Suarez looked lost at the plate this whole series. Am I worried about Eugenio Suarez? Absolutely not. No chance. No chance. So, but anyway, that made it 3-1 as we go to the bottom of the ninth. And Freddie Galvis leads off with a ground rule double. And then Aristides Aquino follows with another double. Makes it 3-2. Casale hammers the ball to center again, but it was called. Aquino tags it, goes third. Jesse Winker's hit by a pitch. And so you got runners on the corners for Joey Votto with one out. And Joey Votto. Good grief. Joey Votto grounded into a double play. Reds lose. Lose 2 out of 3 to the hapless Detroit Tigers. And so we can't even enjoy that for the first time in history. Reds pitchers began the season with at least 10 strikeouts in each of the first 3 games. Can't even enjoy it. I don't know what to say. Let's not panic yet. Yes, there are fewer games this season than most. Yes, these games do hurt more than regular losses would in 162-game seasons. There's no question about it. Losing 2-3 to one of the worst teams in the league, not a great way to start. But, 57 games to go. Good teams come up next a little bit. We're going to find what the Reds are made out of, and I think they're made of pretty good stuff. I'm okay with them. I'm just happy that the pitching is as good as advertised so far and that Joey Votto came ready to play. Now, he always comes ready to play, but the results were there in the first series this year. So, fantastic. Fantastic performance by Votto. Less than fantastic by the bullpen. But, is what it is. Reds are now 1-2. Let's see what happens next. All right, hang tight. We're going to talk to Sydney for a little while, and then we'll be back at you on Friday with a regularly scheduled edition of Red Leg Nation Radio. Thanks for listening. Hey, I'm joined today by Sydney Price. Sydney, one of our patrons at patreon.com/redlegradio, where you too can support the Cincinnati Reds number one podcast, I guess. In my mind, anyway, right? Sydney, good to talk to you. We've interacted on Twitter some over the years, but good to finally get to talk to you in person. How are you?
Good. Doing well.
Excellent. Now, let's talk a little bit about, because this is something that's interesting to me. You're a little younger than I am, and so I like finding out how, those in your generation kind of came about, came to be a Reds fan. Now, where are you from, first of all?
So, I am from Miamisburg, Ohio. Chris Garber, both me and him were from Miamisburg. So that's a little bit south of Dayton, Ohio. It's like 15-20 minutes south of there. And I've spent my entire life in the Dayton area, Cincinnati area.
Okay. So Reds country. That's how you became a Reds fan.
Yes.
Born into it. That's sad, actually. You had no choice, did you?
No, not really. I grew up going to really more Dragons games than anything else, because they're the hometown team here, and we could get tickets for real cheap, and they were like practically giving them away in elementary school. So,
yeah. I've been to a couple games there at Dayton. I wish I'd been to more, but that's one of my favorite places ever to see a minor league game. They do a good job there, and so you had it close by, and that's a pretty good introduction to pro baseball, I guess. Not quite the Reds, but a pretty fun place to watch the game.
Absolutely.
Now, so you're kind of born into it. Now, you went to I think you and Chris both went to the same high school, right?
Yes.
Again, Chris is closer to my age, so you all weren't there at the same time.
A couple of years apart, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. We're not going to talk any more about how old I am, if you don't mind. You kids make me feel old. But you're part of this generation that I talk about a lot that really has not had a lot to root for. So you become a pretty devoted Reds fan over the years. How difficult has that been, given how they've not been great?
Well, it's been sort of hard, but I don't know why, but I've fallen in love with baseball. I don't know what it is, but I can watch the NBA, I can watch the NFL, but nothing matches up to Reds baseball. Just nothing. I can watch the Cavs, I can watch the Bengals or the Browns or whatever, and sure, I like them, but watching the first pitch the other day from Sonny Gray, not going to lie to you, about made me cry, because I'm so happy that it's finally here.
Yeah, no, I mean, I wish I could put into words, you know, what it means, why baseball means that much to and why it appeals to certain people. Because I'm the same way, you know, I don't know that I can really put anything on it. I just, it's always been in the background in my life, and I like having it on in the background. And yeah, when they actually started playing, for me, it was the first pitch against Detroit. You know, playing against another team at Great American Ballpark, same way, you know, like, oh, wow, it's finally back. And we can talk about how long they're going to be back maybe after with the news. We're recording this on Sunday afternoon, and news is going crazy. We'll talk about that in a moment. Okay. But yeah, that opening day game was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, especially with a win opening day. Now, the game afterwards, the second game of the season, didn't go quite as well, but yeah.
Yeah, really. Tell me about it. Do we have to talk about that? Please, no.
Snow here.
Yeah. So, before we get back to the current team, what are some of what's the earliest Reds memory that you have? Can you pinpoint something like the earliest memory that you have of the Reds, or something that appealed to you?
So, my earliest memory that I have, just straight up from me, not like looking at old pictures or stuff, is like, I remember my dad, his work would have one of the company sponsored little areas up there with like all you can eat buffet and stuff like that, and going to the game, watching it in one of those seats up there. Don't really remember anything about the game aside from getting to watch the game from up there and eat a lot of food.
That's a great memory.
But my earliest memories of actual baseball, I started becoming like a diehard fan around the 2016-17 season. And that's when I started to actually be like, oh, this is who all the players are. How good are they? Like, I have a little miniature bat that I take with me to all of the games, and I took with me to the Reds Caravan these last 2 years to get signed. And my first two signatures were Patrick Kivelhan and Arismendi Alcantara.
Oh, some Reds legends.
Yes. a couple of people who you're probably like, what? Who are they? Yeah.
Yeah, those are the guys that 10 years later you're looking on the baseball reference page for that team. You're like, I don't even remember these people.
Exactly. Whereas they're always going to have a special place in my heart because they're my first two signatures.
Yeah.
So.
So that's, you know, wow, you really started at a rough time to be a Reds fan, because right in the middle of that streak of 90 lost seasons.
Oh, goodness. Yes.
But
I really don't have any memories of, like, the wild card seasons, or, like, God forbid I bring it up, the the 20, I believe 2013 season where we lost to the Giants.
2012.
Yeah, 2012 was when it was. Okay. I really don't have any memories of those, if we're being honest with each other.
Oh, man. Oh, you're killing me. You're killing me. But, well, maybe that's not a bad thing, because there were some good memories in those years, but there were some tough ones as well. So, you know, when the Reds finally made the playoffs in 2010, something I said a lot back then was, wow, for those of us who have suffered through the bad years, you know, this is a great reward. And it's got to be the same for you if and when the Reds actually are good again. And we'll talk about this year's team. We hope they are this year. But are you sort of sticking with them just because it'll be worth it once they're actually good again? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sticking with them because I'm not a fair-weathered fan. This is the team I've grown up with. I've just grown up with this team, and this is the only team I've really ever known, and I can't imagine rooting on a different team. I root on, like, the Indians from time to time if they're not playing us, because why not? They're another Ohio team. But that's really about it. It's just sort of like, well, if they do well, you know what? I would love a World Series of Reds versus Indians. But
I'll take it. Absolutely. Where do I sign up for that?
Exactly.
Now, who have been your favorite players over the years?
Well, I really liked Wiegand Dietrich from last season. Unlike Garver. But
yeah.
I really liked those two, and then really those two have really been it. And then like following like Suarez with just his journey with us, and watching all of these little traits that seem to be like turning nothing into something, with Dan Straley turning him into Luis Castillo, the budding ace he is, and then turning Alfredo Simon into Suarez, 49 home runs in a season.
Yeah. Those are the ones that just make you, you know, sort of blink your eyes like that really happened for the Reds. Seems like the type of thing that the Reds would be doing for other teams and handing good players away.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you've been through some losing times as a Reds fan.
And we're coming into,
let's dial back to the beginning of 2020 before things went crazy. And the Reds had made these signings in the offseason. And basically what I want to know is, given that you've suffered through some of these 90 lost teams, how excited were you for the season to start back when spring training was getting here? What were your thoughts as we came into the first spring training back in February?
I was so excited because I thought, you know what, this will be our first taste at having meaningful games in August, and actually having our games towards the end of the season, our last 10, 15, 20 games, actually mean something. Whereas in the past few years, it's been like, all right, who are we calling up from the 40 man, or who's getting injured that their season's gone? So who's a just random Red that is going to make an appearance, you know?
Right.
That's several years.
Yeah, it was a different feel, and it's been a while. I mean, it's been, you know, since 2012 or 13, which is a long time. So long ago that you can't remember anything about those teams. That's a whole different feeling than these other years where you're kind of like hoping if this goes right and this goes right, yeah, we can possibly be a good team. I could see things falling right. You know, the way I always put it is, you know, I can kind of squint and see how the Reds could be good if things fall the right way. But this year was a thing where, you know, you didn't have to have very many things fall the right way, and they were going to be good. And then everything fell the wrong way, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Last season, I was looking at the team, and I was like, you know what? This should be a playoff team. And then turn around, and we have, like, 80 losses. And it's like, what do we have to do to be a good team?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right, yeah.
We added so many good pieces between Jose Iglesias, who was a good addition for that 1 year, Puig, and then turning him into who we thought was going to be a good Bauer, which turned out to be 6.5 ERA with him.
Right.
Lord of mercy, I don't want him this season.
Yeah, yeah, we need the good Bauer, please, if he still please. Exists. Yeah. So then the everything goes crazy, and baseball is the last thing on anyone's mind, really, throughout the last few months. And you know, I try to keep this podcast going during that time, just because I know a lot of people listen, and a lot of people like you who have supported the podcast. I want to make sure we kept churning it out, but it's tough for a while because it's tough to concentrate on baseball at all. But now we finally get baseball, and opening day was. You know, you can't forget everything that's going on in the world, but it was a good 2 or 3 hour sort of take a deep breath and just kind of chill for a minute. That's the way it was for me. Did you have that sense? Like it was just kind of a, okay, this is a tiny piece of normal, even though baseball is not normal right now, but it's a tiny piece of normal back in our abnormal lives. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I did for a second, but I was actually at work, and I've been at work the past couple of days when the games have been going on. So I work at Hardee's, and we literally did not have any cars, and I'm like, it's almost time for first pitch. I want to see it. I swear, if there's any cars that pull up, I just want to watch first pitch, please.
Please.
Please. For however long baseball lasts, I just want to see at least first pitch, please.
Yes, and you got to.
Thankfully, I did.
Excellent, excellent. So, as I said, we're recording this on Sunday afternoon. And some news today, Mike Moustakas woke up not feeling well. He's been placed on what's called the injured list. It's the COVID-related injured list. Now, you don't have to have tested positive for COVID to be on that list. They put you on there, and then, you know, if you show any kind of a symptom, he just woke up not feeling well. You really don't have to have any reason to put him on there, and then they get another test. And he's never tested positive. There's not been any report that he's tested positive today even, at least as of the time that we talk, but I think out of abundance of caution, they did that. They put Nick Senzel back in the lineup, then they scratched him again. No word about that. But also, they've called up Tyler Stevenson, the Reds' number two prospect by most organizations, including Doug Gray's Reds minor leagues. And so maybe we get to see the big prospect play here. But things are kind of strange this morning, and it really kind of makes you wonder what's going to happen in this season, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean between him possibly having it, but then last night Matt Davidson testing positive, and him being a Red for like blinking your eyes half a second, I'm hoping with Moose and Senzel, it's just a cautionary thing, of just, you know what, we want to be as careful as we can be, and we realize how dangerous this can be, so let's just make sure everyone doesn't have it. Everyone's as safe as they can be, and if they're not going to be here, then the COVID injured list doesn't even have any minimum or maximum days to it. So, I mean, Moose could literally be on it for today and tomorrow and come back, or just today and come back, and we could send someone back down to Prasco. So,
yeah, that's a great point, and that's the benefit, I guess, of having that Prasco so close, is that you can make those calls pretty quick, especially when you're at home. But, yeah, I mean, if he tests negative for it, then it could be a little bug or something. He could literally be back tomorrow.
If he tests,
we haven't heard that he's tested positive yet. That's not been released. That may or may not be released. But if he tests positive, basically, it's a great point that they didn't put him on the 10-day injured list like you would with somebody that got hurt. You have to have two consecutive negative tests, 24 hours apart. And after you have that, you're back on the so he presumably tested negative yesterday because he played. So if he tests negative today, he could be back whenever. So, but again, that's sort of the thing that's hanging over the season, is that we have to be worried about this, because we have to be worried about this in all aspects of our lives. And, you know, we're all hoping baseball can give us a little bit of that normalcy, but it's just not normal, is it?
It's not. I very much want to just watch baseball and sort of act like everything's normal, but I just can't. I can't.
No. The hope is going to be that we get through this thing eventually, and the Reds are set up to be pretty good if they don't screw things up too bad for the next few years. So yes, this is going to be a crazy season. Hopefully we can get to the end of this season. And I'm here to say the Reds are absolutely 100% going to make the playoffs this year, because 16 teams are going to make the playoffs. And if the Reds are not one of the top 16 teams in the league this year, I'll be very surprised. But
I will be pulling all of my hair out if that happens. But that seems like such a Cincinnati thing to do, to be like, yeah, we want to really try, and they put everything down to like, you know what, this will be our season, and then COVID happens, and then like, oh, you know what, we're gonna make 16 teams make it, and then we'd be like team 17. It seems like most Cincinnati sports thing ever.
Sydney, that's a great point. That's classic, classic Cincinnati sports. I'd always thought of it in terms of. You know, I'd said something similar to friends in the past. Oh, man, Cincinnati sports would be they finally have a good team and a global pandemic shuts down the game. The one year the Reds are finally good. But
I also live in Dayton. So Dayton men's basketball was good this season and was supposed to make a run. And then COVID happened and took the tournament away. So, yeah.
And that's actually worse than the Reds situation, because the Reds have been decent in the past. No, Reds will probably be good next year. But Dayton's been good for a while, but this year they were Final Four good.
Yeah.
To lose the season, it hurts for them. But then that means that the University of Virginia Cavaliers got to remain national champions for a second year. So it's not all bad, right?
I'm not going to bring up the four-lettered university that I want to be next.
Thank you. Please don't. I've heard that... more times than you can imagine.
I bet, especially on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. But the other thing is, though, not only is it the most Cincinnati sports thing ever, but like you said, wouldn't it be even more Cincinnati sports if we do actually have a full season and then they expand the playoffs and the Reds still don't make the playoffs? I mean, that's classic Cincinnati sports, and I'm frankly sick of it.
Please, no. I don't want to be in that world. I really don't.
I don't either. What do you see from the Reds for the next few years? I mean, do you feel like they're on the right track?
I really do. I mean, it's really, for the next few years, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Bauer and how Bauer does this season. See if they extend him for maybe, well, he said he's only signing 1-year extensions. So see if they extend him for next season or if they let him walk. See if Castellanos sticks around. If I'm not mistaken, he has an out.
He does.
So he could very well leave in free agency. But it really depends on if we have a season, how it goes. I mean, I can't imagine us making it to the championship game, the NL championship game, or to the World Series and Castellanos leaving us. Now, if we only make the playoffs and like lose in the first round, then I could. But
yeah, and some of that'll be what's the free agent situation going to be like this winter? Are teams going to be willing to spend money because they've not been making as much? Yes, it's all crazy. I'm hopeful he's going to stick around, but you're right. That's a big if going into next year.
I still have a lot of hope in Aquino and what he'll turn into. I still have some hope in him. So we'll see what happens with him, and if Castellanos does take the door out, then I'm all for Aquino possibly getting some more playing time in his spot. But, I mean, we still have a lot of outfielders. Irvin, Winker, Akiyama, and then Senzel are all out there. So
it's a pretty good group.
Absolutely, especially if you do a platoon with Winker, Irvin, or Winker, and what you've been trying to do, Akiyama.
Yeah.
Really, really, I just don't want to see Winker against lefties because he has not been able to hit them at all in his professional career. He's been able to mash righties, so throw him against righties all day long. But lefties, he's always struggled. So,
absolutely. Who's your favorite player on the current team? That's something I was going to ask you. On this year's team.
Aside from the obvious, like, Votto and all that, I'm probably going to have to go with Amir Garrett, because I actually got to, in the off time between spring training and summer camp, I got to play MLB The Show against him.
Oh, you played in that against him?
Or yes.
Because he's big on... Yeah.
He was just inviting fans all the time to play against him, so I'm like, shoot, I'll try, and lost in a one-run game against him. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
He would have beaten me by 30 runs.
I'm
as my son does often. I watched him playing, you know, he was streaming on Twitch, I guess, and I watched him a little bit a couple times. That guy's a gamer.
Absolutely.
That's a good, and he's one of my favorite Reds as well. I like a guy like that, that shows some emotion on the field and acts like he's actually having fun playing baseball. It's such a strange thing for somebody to act like they're actually having fun. So that's why Garrett's on my short list of favorite players. I like when he does his little dance after he strikes somebody out. I'm all for that.
I'm all for showing emotion. Just don't. I wasn't for him fighting the Pirates, but it was fun to watch.
It was. Like that emotion. Same with Puig. He's always going to be one of my favorite Reds, even though he wasn't as good as we hoped. He was only here for part of a year, but gosh, everything he did while he was in a Reds uniform made me like him more.
Especially since he got in a fight with the Pirates with Amir Garrett when he was supposed to have been traded already. The Indians.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I love that guy. Hope he's doing well, and hope he hooks back on with someone. He signed with the Braves for just a minute.
Yeah, he did, and then he tested positive, and then it was off. So hopefully he stays healthy and well.
Yeah, somebody will give him a chance. Now, Sydney, how did you come across the podcast? Do you remember when you first started listening to Red Leg Nation Radio?
So, really, I just, around the 2016-17 season, I started to get more involved with, like, that was around the same time when I joined Twitter, and I started to get more involved with, like, the Reds, and then I stumbled upon you and, like, Doug Gray, and I love him to death, but he's so annoying, Philip Razor.
Excellent.
And Coop and all them, and I stumbled upon all of the group of good people we have out there on Twitter, and then you started promoting your podcast, and I listened to it, and then I've started to listen to y'all, the Locked On Reds with Jeff Carr, mm-hmm. and then the one, I'm forgetting it, shoot, he does it out of Hawaii.
Well, goodness gracious. Steve Offenbaker, but I won't.
His podcast.
It's completely escaping me, too. I listen to it every week.
And then Coop's podcast. Because I've really been listening to all of them as I really haven't had much to do aside from work, and we haven't had sports, so.
Yeah. We got a good group, don't we, of Reds podcasts. I love them all. They're all fantastic, and I encourage – I'm not competitive on that in that aspect. I just go listen to them all. They're all great and a bunch of dedicated Reds fans. Some are more safe for work than others, though. We'll say that, right?
Don't listen to Coop with your children around. Please do not.
Listen to it. Just make sure you know who's around you.
Yeah.
I've actually agreed to go on the Hunt for Reds October podcast sometime in the next couple weeks. So we'll see if I can survive that.
And you were just on the Locked On Reds.
Yeah, I've gone on all of them on Red Reporter. Whenever they do that, in the past they did it more regularly. And I'm happy to go on all of them. If anybody asks, I'll join. I like talking about the Reds.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Well, tell us your Twitter handle.
It is TransRedsFan.
Okay, at TransRedsFan. Go follow me. I've been on Twitter the last couple of days, first two days of the season, just during the Reds game. I've been away for a couple months because it's toxic. But I came back and I saw what you just mentioned, which is that if I come on just during the Reds game and just talk about the Reds, there is a pretty good group there of Reds fans that's fun to talk about and reasonable don't overreact too much to silly things. And you can have some pretty good discussion there if you have the right group of people. I think you identified that there is a good group out there, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yes, there is.
All right, Sid, anything else you want to talk about before we head out? I'm glad to have gotten a chance to get to talk to you a little bit.
Aside from, thankfully, the Reds are still in a tie ball game today with Bauer on the mound. I'm all good.
All right, yeah, this is how dedicated we are. We're not paying attention to the beginning of the Reds game today because we're recording some sweet content for the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. Sydney, it's been great getting to talk to you here today. Thanks for coming on, And thanks for supporting the podcast at Patreon so much. Can't tell you how much I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.